Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Tony Black, your host, and this is a very special episode for the show and for me because I have on an enormously special guest who is here to talk about his appearance in Season 11's new episode, Episode 2. I am over the moon to welcome Mr. Dean Haglund to the X-Cast.
Hey, Tony, how are you? Thank you for having me here.
I am delighted. I'm going to be a bit fanboy now, Dean, in that, you know, I grew up watching you. I really did. I grew up watching The X-Files. I grew up loving The Lone Gunman, like we all did. So to actually have a conversation with you is a true thrill for me. So,
thank you, Tony.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming on. So everyone knows who you are. We don't have to go through all that preamble, but everyone knows Dean Haglund. So why don't you tell us a bit about your return to The X-Files, which I think everyone was a bit surprised about with your appearance in this, that Langley's back. So tell us a little bit about that.
No one's more surprised than me, I'll tell you. You know, season 10, there was a bit of a fan uproar, of course, because the gunman had all of 1 second of airtime. To great expense of the production company. I, of course, am living in Sydney, Australia now, so they had to fly me to Vancouver and the whole nine yards to get me there for the shamanistic dancing country western scene for Mulder.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, well, that sort of ends our time with the X-Files. And then I get another email out of the blue going, hey, we got something for you on season 11. Are you available? And it was a bit of a different production crew this time, so I was dealing with somebody new. And again, they flew me from Sydney to Vancouver, but this time it was much more screen time, more elaborate. And so now I'm putting my head around, this is airing after everybody's seen the episode, is that right?
That's absolutely right. And I must preface this, as I've just told you off air, I haven't seen this yet, but I'm happy to be spoiled. I really don't.
Okay, so I'm ruining it for you, but everyone else has seen it.
It's fine.
And because if you listen to my podcast, Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, for the last 10 years, we always end it with belated spoiler alert because I am the king of the spoilers. If I see the movie first, I will just blab the whole thing. I shot this last August, and I had been ready to blow the whole plot line every party I've been to. And luckily, my girlfriend was by my side going, no, don't. So she's in my head right now as I'm trying to nail phrase, but of course, most people seen it. And if you haven't seen it now, just pause the podcast, go watch the show, and then come back.
Yeah.
Okay. So Glenn Morgan, of course, who Glenn Morgan and James Wan created the Lone Gunman characters back in season one. Their background, of course, they were great writers. They wrote on Wise Guy, 21 Jump Street. And their brilliance was not only incorporating unusual characters and stuff like that, but they had an amazing ability to think innovatively, and on a lot of their early TV scripts, they would add 3 pages of notes for the director on how to shoot some of this elaborate stuff in 3 to 4 days, which is often, you know, your timeline in episodic television. So Glenn Morgan was there. He wrote this episode, and even though the Lone Gunman are dead, he's very much into this new concept of uploading one's consciousness into the cloud, that there's services offered now where you can basically live forever digitally, so that the artificial intelligence that is growing in computer worlds can basically upload your personality, your intelligence, everything you know, how you speak, how you manifest, and people are doing this voluntarily. In this episode, it's an idea of a sinister world where it's done involuntarily to all these geniuses and, you know, Langley included, humbly. And
obviously, yeah.
And we are, yes, and we're in a digital prison where now the elite are using our brain power to get them off the planet and build a whole new world for them.
Oh.
And and so we are trapped, and I have figured out a way to somehow hack backwards, reverse engineer into Mulder's cell phone and talk to him unknowing, as one would, if you think about it, if your whole consciousness is uploaded into a synthetic virtual reality, would you know you're dead? And so now we get into this whole moral thing, and then Mulder and Scully spend the entire episode wondering, is Langley and the Lone Gunman dead? Are they? Did they actually die? Did we see their bodies in the coffin, which we didn't?
No.
All this sort of thing. So it's sort of retroactively coming up with new technology, which is, you know, the brilliance of Glenn and James in the first place. So it's opened up a whole new layer, worse than the syndicate that was led by Smoking Man.
Yeah.
Now this is like an artificial syndicate virtual world that ends very darkly and leaves it open-ended. So holy smokes.
Yeah. It connects to the premiere in a big way as well, which I've just watched today. So hearing this, I'm like, whoa!
Yeah, I know. Amazing, right? Yeah, season 11, they really sat down and planned out really as a whole new world, which is exactly what The X-Files was all along, you know, for the 10 seasons.
Yeah.
They had so many layers, and it had the potential to keep going. And so they really now are exploring those layers.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I'm happy to be spoiled there. I really am. I'm really excited for the episode.
Really?
I really am. I was already excited anyway, but I'm even more excited now. So awesome.
Well, yeah, and when you see how they did it, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the digital work and stuff like that. So, and it was actually kind of hard as an actor, because normally you are performing with other people, but my entire monologue and all my things were directly into a camera that had a anti-spit glass on. So basically, it's like saying your lines to yourself in front of a mirror.
Right.
Which in every acting school, they teach you don't learn your lines like that. So
that's true.
You're never supposed to look directly in your own eye in a mirror recite your lines.
That's
exactly how I had to perform it.
You've headed off my next question there in a way, which was, how did this work? You know, you were on set, you were in Vancouver. Is it true that they didn't know where you were because you'd moved to Sydney and they had to get, was it Bruce Harwood who found you or told them where you were?
Yeah, well, no, season 10.
Oh, was that season 10?
Season 10.
Yeah.
But then again, so, you know, I have a website, a podcast, a weekly podcast that's been free for 10 years. My Instagram account has all my artwork on it. I have all these paintings of Sydney and Newtown. So, you know, it's not hard to figure out where I am.
A simple Google
it's
search.
Just, you know. And I've been here for 3 years, so I'm not chastising, you know, some of the interns at the production company for not doing any research. But yeah, it's true that you know, they're busy. It's a really it's a big production, so they can't just hunt me down. but Bruce said, yeah, definitely, you know, we're back, and you should really call these guys. And I thought, you know, that's weird. Hi, I'd like to be on the TV show. That's not how it works.
No.
That's in fact exactly what I did. I called. They went, "Oh my God, we've been looking all over for you." It's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Did you Google?
Here I am.
I
know.
Why didn't you Google?
I know. Well, I don't know. Or Skype or LinkedIn or how many platforms am I on?
Yeah. If I can get hold of you, Dean, you know, they should have. They should be able to do
Tony,
it.
Tony, we're talking for crying out loud. And that was an email that got this started. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's not that difficult.
No.
This time they had the email already on file, and it was just a simple email, and it was great.
Did you get to have any reunions or anyone with anyone in this? I mean, obviously, I know the other lone gunmen weren't with you, but did you get to see David Duchovny? Did you get to have a reunion with various cast members and crew members and things like that?
No, that was the weirdest thing. So they flew me in, I think the Friday before. There was no table read or rehearsal. There's never been really in the X-Files. The gunman just got their lines and you said them and then got out of there. and then, you know, have a little chat with David and Jillian afterwards. But this time, my call time and all my scenes were done at 6 a.m., Monday morning.
Wow.
And so, Yeah. So I'm first up. So everything you see where I'm looking bedraggled and stuff like that is because I am. And yeah, it was a 4:30 a.m. pickup from the hotel, 6 a.m. because they, you know, makeup and all that. Mm. And then I was done by 6:40.
Wow.
And back in the car by 6:45. And everyone else's call time was 7:30, 8 o'clock. So they just drove me back to the hotel. I go, oh, should I wait around? And the driver goes, no, I got a bunch of other people to pick up. If you wait around, you won't get back to your hotel till like 10 p.m. And we were like,
So I'm like,
yeah. Okay. So I met Barbara Hershey briefly.
Right.
She was just walking in and shook her hand. But there was no reunion, no hey, no catch-up whatsoever. So so that was a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
But David's band is coming to Sydney in February. So I might go sneak backstage and say hi and catch his set.
That's good. Delayed reunion then, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're on TV at the same time. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like it was brief or all done, really. I mean, for the whole revival as a whole, I mean, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like, I mean, everyone's really excited about it. Everyone feels like it's been a real success. Are you, you know, was it fun going back to it all, after all that time and being part of it, obviously in Babylon and then in this?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Babylon was more fun because Chris was directing and so many of, you know, Mitch and everybody. And it was no pressure. There were no lines. We just had to sort of mimic some country rock video and you know, dancing girls everywhere, so that was fun and catching up. And it was like 15 years hadn't passed. It was all the same jokes,
yeah,
same crew, same working till 4:30 in the morning, which we had always done. You know, everybody talks about how the dark look of the X-Files. It's because we, you know, we watched the sunrise every Saturday for 10 years. So that was fun. This time it was, it still was fun. It was great seeing Glenn after all these years, because often he's, you know, writing our scenes, but he's in the writer's room, often in Los Angeles. We're up in Vancouver. Mm. So, you know, we knew each other from hanging out at a couple of conventions over the years, but working with him and actually getting, he was directing the episode too, was, that was really cool. We worked really well together and, you know, what can you say? He's so brilliant,
yeah,
as both a writer and a director. So, and then a lot of the crew, there was a lot of the same crew. There were some new people. There was actually some crew members that worked with me on stage in the 90s at Vancouver Theatre Sports League.
Right, yeah.
I would do 10 shows a week for 4.5 years at this theater, highly successful improv theater in Vancouver. And some of the guys that worked there were now working crew on the show, so it was like fun catching up that way too.
Well, it must have been great going back to Vancouver to do this. Obviously, the last few seasons were in LA, as you say. So, it must have been great to go back to Vancouver, and you know, because that's where most people feel the X-Files home truly is.
Well, yeah, you know? And the weather, and you know, it has a certain look, and often they'll work around that. You know, just wait for sunny days to shoot and pretend you're in, you know, somewhere else. Which was the great thing about Vancouver is the locations could look like so many other places.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you, traveling around when I would do stand-up and headline at comedy clubs in like Fort Wayne, Indiana or somewhere, they would go, oh, yeah, you've been here before because there's an episode of The X-Files set in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I'm like, no, that was all Vancouver.
Yeah.
And they swear, you know, that they knew the street or they knew the building where it was shot at. But so much Vancouver looks like that. They even have a production book that basically has every city in the U.S. and then the street in Vancouver that can match that city.
Wow.
So, yeah, so they hand that to you if you're coming up to shoot there. And it's a nicety of the Vancouver production film whatever.
Yeah.
Film commission.
That's amazing. It is a really sort of elastic city for all that kind of thing. You know, I'd love to do a pilgrimage one day and go and find all the All the Indiana locations in Vancouver.
Everyone yeah. went to. Well, you know, they do. I get postcards and stuff from fans around the world that do the X-Files location tour. Mm. And I don't know if the locations manager still does that, but for a while there was a tour and he would drive you to, you know, the mine shafts where the alien embryos are kept and the Navajo Red Rock Anastasi quarry. That was actually just a rock quarry that they painted red with 10,000 gallons of paint.
Amazing.
To make it look like Arizona. Yeah. So they went, you know, out of their way. So it's quite an interesting tour.
Yeah.
If you're ever in Vancouver.
Oh, well, I'll go. I'll make it happen somehow.
Fantastic.
Did you as well reunite with the other gunmen for the audio dramas that came out this year? Because you lent your voice, didn't you, to the Cold Cases and Stolen Lives audio dramas?
Did you get
to record with Bruce Harwood and Tom Braidwood for that as well?
Unfortunately, I did not. I was listening to it and I thought the editing was brilliant
because
it does sound like we're all chatting together.
Yeah.
Just like old times. But I recorded solo in a booth down here in Sydney. And according to the director producer, he had to do that for 11 different cities to bring the whole cast together. And it was, you know, all these time zones. He did an amazing job putting that thing together.
Was that Dirk Maggs?
Now you're stretching my memory.
Yeah, because he was the producer, and we had him on the show, and he was saying how it was a gargantuan effort really to get everyone together. But it sounds like you're in the same room. It really does. And those comics are great fun because I think everyone was really glad to see what happened to the gunman in those comics and that they turned out to be alive.
Right.
So it was. Did you enjoy playing those alternate universe sort of gunmen?
Yeah, for sure. It was really fun. And, you know, when IDW first came out and they said, oh, we're doing all sorts of cool things, I was like, I'm all for it because I, you know, also have a graphic novel in the works of a lone gunman storyline.
Oh, awesome.
Of an alternative universe that I'm actually sitting here with my iPen and my iPad on Procreate
drawing it
as we speak. So, deadlines are crushing, but it's going to happen.
Can you give us any hints, Dean, about it? Or is it all top secret?
It's all kind of top secret at the moment.
Okay.
You know what, Tony? Here's the promise. When it's done, I'll come back on the show and talk all about it.
That'd be amazing. Let's do it. I'll hold you to that now. That's on air.
Okay.
You can't, there's no getting out of that now.
No problem.
Brilliant. That's great. That sounds fantastic, yeah. But, I mean, do you feel like the way that the show ended for the Lone Gunman and for Langley and everything like that. How did you feel about it at the time? And I know there was the show, the Lone Gunman spin-off show that you got to do just before that and things like that. And it was, you know, but how did you feel about the way it all came to an end in Jump the Shark?
Well, yeah, you know, Frank Spotnitz gave me a call and he goes, okay, listen, it's, you know, our final season. So we think we're going to kill off the Lone Gunman.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And then he said, but it's going to be really cool. I go, no, you know what? I think that's way better for us to go out in a blaze of glory than to, like, have us walk off into the sunset with a stick and a hobo bag. You know, that would be sort of, oh, that's kind of a downbeat. But and again, in sci-fi, no one ever really dies.
Yeah.
And sure enough, when the art department had the coffins hermetically sealed, if you look in that episode, there's three. If you die of a virus infestation, they put you in a hermetically sealed steel coffin so as not to infect anyone else. They had, in the props department, built two taller ones and one shorter one because one of the gunmen is way shorter than the other two.
Yeah.
And Chris Carter said, no, make them all the same size.
Oh.
Giving us an out.
Yeah.
Our bodies may not have been in there.
And that's what Joe Harris did with the comics, is he took and run with that, didn't he? And that you were in a bunker in Arlington Cemetery, which is really
Absolutely.
Clever.
Absolutely. It's really clever.
I really wanted that to be true, though. In my head canon, that's what happened to the gunman. Really.
Well, exactly. And you know, at Comic-Con, I moderated a panel with Chris Carter and IDW writers, and I think Jillian was there too. Mm. And I put Chris Carter's feet to the fire, and I said, is IDW's comic book official canon? And he said yes.
Yeah.
But then when season 10 came out, they couldn't reconcile all of it, so then he recanted that. But there was a moment there where he thought he had that as official canon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now, obviously, you know, Langley's in the cloud, isn't he? So maybe he's both in the cloud and under the ground, you know, in his secret bunker. You know, who knows? Maybe there's two Langleys.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And if we know anything about what the X-Files has taught us about alien human genetic replication, how hard would it be to then download from the cloud the entire personality into a avatar, wet wired alien human hybrid that's, you know, recast by someone 80 years younger than myself?
who would you want to play the new Langley?
The new Langley?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I would look for, you know, a really young, up-and-coming comic. You know, someone maybe from the modern dance world who also does stand-up, but, you know.
Oh, if only. If we do get a season 12, which I know might be a bit unlikely, but we need to tell Chris Carter that. It's brilliant.
Okay, knock on wood.
Well, you speaking about aliens and replication and all this kind of thing reminds me of your documentary, The Truth Is Out There. Which I watched today in preparation from speaking to you. I really, really enjoyed that. It was terrific. It was great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, tell us about how, if people haven't seen that, certainly for and we're, you know, we're both sides of the pond and beyond the X-Cast. But for those of you in the UK, it's on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it on there, which is great. But for anyone else, so, you know, go and watch it if you haven't. Tell us how it all came about and what you wanted to get out of that.
Well, this is my co-host on the podcast, Phil Lernes. Mm. He had attended with me a couple of conventions. And because I'm so close to it, I didn't realize it was such an unusual world that I was involved in. But he said, we got to film this. And so he, as the director and the cameraman, followed me around for an entire year as we went around, as I do. I travel around the world doing conventions, not just sci-fi conventions, but alternative consciousness and conspiracy conventions and all that sort of thing, and UFO stuff. Mm. And, you know, a lot of these researchers, I don't even call them conspiracy theorists. They've spent a lot of their time researching very specific aspects of either Tesla technology, UFO phenomena, you know, alien-human hybrid modeling, all of that stuff. And so we went around and just explored these things and talked to people. And not, you know, so many of them have their guard up when there's a documentary camera crew, because it's either they're going to get a gotcha moment or they're trying to make them look ridiculous. So once you actually just approach them and just listen to them, we would edit out that first, you know, blush of defensiveness. Mm. And once we got into a conversation, that's what you see in the documentary. And it's this idea of what is the information, you know, and how to get past the messenger. Mm. Because we, you know, so many people said to us, how could you let that wing nut into your otherwise great documentary? And it was always, you know, everybody had one person who they thought was way too not resonating with them. And so the idea is that you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, that everybody has some bit of information, that all of this searching for the truth, as it were, has also a sense of fun to it. There's a sense of relief. It doesn't have to be this dark rabbit hole that you go into and, you know, get into a mire of paranoia, as it were. So this is what we were trying to do with this documentary, that you can go into researching not just truth, but ideas of consciousness and how lost, our second part of this will be the lost wisdom that we had, because it was either, you know, financially or how business is done was suppressing some of this stuff, or, you know, business as usual, planned obsolescence, all of that kind of thing, how that affects all of us at the same time. So all of this doesn't have to be in such a negative light. There's a positive uplift to finding the truth. Yeah. And so we really sort of focused on that end of it.
Did you have an interest in this before you were on the X-Files? Was this something that you've always been interested in, you know, going through your whole life, and it just happens to coincide with being on a show like the X-Files? Or did that trigger some of this off and learning certain things?
Well, it was. I didn't really pursue it that much. My brother was much more into it. And in fact, I would have to call him sometimes when a script came in going, what are we talking about in this episode? And so he would sort of be up on it more than I would. But the writers then said, oh, hey, do you want to meet the real life counterparts on where we got this information or who? And then I met like Jordan Maxwell and Dr. Roger Lear and Richard Dolan and all these guys who then, you know, they were excited because they loved the X-Files. I was excited to hear what they were working on. And so our lunches then got to, you know, me being invited to where they were speaking and that kind of thing. And so it just sort of naturally grew from there. But before the show, I had a semblance of it, but I wasn't really focusing or learning that much about it till afterwards.
Yeah, and I think what I really liked about the documentary is that it's got a real mix of, you know, kind of styles. It's got the fascinating interviews with, you know, people talking about UFOs and consciousness and all these things you've mentioned, but it's also interspersed with moments of you doing the stand-up comedy and, you know, the appearances at cons and some really fun lightweight moments. I suppose when I was watching it, I was thinking, was that always part of the plan, or did it more organically develop as you were filming?
Well, I mean, that's always been my thing of going to the conventions, wasn't just to sit there and sign autographs, but to, you know, do what I did. I paid my way through drama school by doing stand-up comedy and improv. And so that's always a natural expression for me, is to get on stage and ham it up, as it were. So when I got to the conventions and I realized, you know, where you're doing your panel during the day is an entire audience, you know, a room at night where nothing's going on. I said, well, I'll go in there and do an hour show and everybody can come and watch. And then that sort of developed to where conventions now sort of have panels during the day and entertainment during the night. They're really fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's always been a thing that I did.
No, it was great, and it really comes out in the film. You mentioned the sequel as well.
Yes.
What's happening with that then? Because I know you were raising funds for that on
Indiegogo.
Yeah, Indiegogo.
I think it's closed, the Indiegogo campaign, and I think we almost reached all our money, but all we had to do is get enough money for Phil to survive the next 6 months of editing that he has to sit down.
Oh my God.
100 hours of footage that he has to go through and then put it all together. So that was basically the Indiegogo. So it's all in the can. It looks spectacular. There's some really cool stuff. And now it's just a matter of sitting in a dark room for months on end to develop the sequel. So we're super excited about that.
Yeah.
And then package them all together.
Do we have any idea on when it might be out?
At the current rate, we think 6 months from now, so next July-ish.
Great.
Ish. And put a big capital ish on that ish. And hopefully, from there we might break it up into segments as a web series, or, you know, do something as in the future of how we all consume media changes, redistribute the whole thing again in smaller chunks.
Right. Okay. So tell us a little bit, you mentioned earlier, but tell us a little bit about what it's going to contain then, what the general gist of the sequel is going to be.
Well, this is more about the ancient wisdom and technologies that have somehow been lost. A lot of it, when we had the first documentary, a lot of the consciousness and the conspiracies had a longer timeline than, you know, this government's hiding that, but it goes back, you know, you follow it into Knights of Templar and further back into Egyptian technologies that are lost. Mm. And so we sort of shunted all of that, edited that part away, and decided to make this about the idea of this ancient wisdom that there is, in the midst of all this noise, this information blizzard, as I call it, that's going on now with all of the technologies and the platforms and all of that. If there is a way that we still can connect to our ancient brethren and have access to not just technologies, but techniques and things that can reground us and find our way forward, as it were. So so that's sort of where that documentary is going to go. But again, as we did with the first documentary, we didn't go in with a script or any sort of set plan of what this movie was going to be. We discovered it as we were shooting it and in the editing room, what the stories were, how each story interconnected with each other. It's not a linear story. We call it a spherical. All the storylines connect spherically so that it's a circular it's a circular editing method. Really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And that's why it requires, you know, it's not like a lot of documentaries go, okay, we're going to explore this and we know and this is going to be the outcome. And then we just cut everything to fit that narrative. Our method is the exact opposite. What's the narrative in all this footage and how do we connect that all?
That's exciting though, isn't it? I mean, taking all these ideas and, you know, it sounds like a lot of the stuff you're talking about is really relevant to what's going on in the world today and, you know, finding things that can, you know, really speak to what's going on. So it's, it must be exciting to have all that footage and, you know, find what this is through it, really.
Yeah. Well, it is too, because, you know, whatever your politics are aside, there is a level of guilt I feel for popularizing the conspiracy idea, and now we have a conspiracy theorist for a president. That somehow missed the other point of our documentary, is that there's a lightness and a joy to truth, not you know, sitting watching three screens while eating McDonald's hamburgers in your bed all night. That is a painting I never want to see. So, and you know, those guys exist, but there is another level to all of this thought that's above that. And by connecting to your past, you can sort of find your way if you've gone into a dark rabbit hole on a lot of this stuff. So we're hoping that this is kind of the antidote to, you know, some of the darker rage that sort of connects conspiracy theory nowadays.
Yeah. It sounds really positive. It sounds like a really positive human message coming out of it. So that's terrific.
Yeah. It's totally that. Yeah. I mean, you know, our podcast is about that. What is right in everything that is wrong, basically. You know, for everything that you think is wrong, there's something right about it. And it's often hard to find, and it takes sometimes a longer timeline, but it's often there. So
we need that more than ever, Dean, I think, right now.
Absolutely. So true.
Absolutely.
So
true. Well, you mentioned the Chillpack Hollywood Hour, your podcast. So you've got that still going on. Is there anything else that you've got coming up? You've mentioned the graphic novel that you're writing, which is really exciting.
Graphic novel, writing?
Yeah, but what else? What else have you got coming
up? Lots of stuff. So this month, if you're in Los Angeles, you can see my artwork at a art salon in downtown Los Angeles.
Awesome.
These are a lot of my paintings of the historic buildings of downtown LA.
Yeah, I saw some of those on your Facebook page. They're really good. They're really nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. No, I've been painting. In fact, my mom doesn't. She didn't know. Why did you like toss away a perfectly good art career pursuing this other thing? And like, you know, that other thing is doing pretty good too.
Yeah, it's not bad.
But she didn't watch that much TV, so she didn't know what I was doing. But to her mind, it was like, oh my God, you know, just do that. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do both. So that show, I'm going to post that on all my Instagrams probably tomorrow. And then I got a couple of movies coming up. And I've been working with another web series called Shakespeare Republic out of Melbourne that's winning awards internationally. And it's basically taking Shakespearean monologues and realigning them to create new narratives.
Oh, wow.
But really well shot and a lot of great actors involved. And that's called Shakespeare Republic. Is it .com.au or maybe just .com?
Yeah.
Maybe just Google Shakespeare Republic and you'll see a really cool web series. And then they're doing another season of that plus some other cool stuff. So I'm working with them a lot. And then a couple of other things I don't think I can mention.
Yeah, it's X-Files season 12. We know that's what you're saying.
Yeah, no.
It's fine.
No, that, as you know, I would spoil instantly. That,
yeah, of course.
In fact, Fox had been very lenient this time around. I didn't have to sign any of the NDAs or okay. anything. They were way cooler about it this season than season 10. I guess because it's so hard to police. And season 10, everybody was spoiling it anyway. So they couldn't, you know... There was no way they could hold anybody to these draconian.
Yeah.
You can't talk. You can't show pictures. You can't tweet about it. You know, this time around, and which is why you saw Jillian and David on set with so many tweets, right? Because nobody signed. They didn't make anybody sign anything like that. So
that's true. There was a lot of that. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And season 10, we were all restricted on that sort of thing. Yeah. So. In fact, my contract said you couldn't even draw on set.
Really?
And I brought my sketchbook. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, is that specifically targeted at me? Because I think I'm the only one who brings a sketchbook to set, really.
Why would that? Are they worried you're going to draw the set? And they're like, look, this is where this scene's like, going on.
Yeah, exactly. Or I'm going to draw like an entire episode. And I don't know what they, I don't, you know, I'm not that fast of a drawer.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but that was weird.
Yeah.
And so that's gone. So, so future work, there's a lot of artwork coming up, potentially an art show here, but follow me on Instagram at Dean Hagelin. You'll see, I'm putting a picture up daily, but technically I'm putting a picture up every 4 days because, you know, I'm really busy.
Yeah. That's fair enough. So, yeah, great. Okay. Well, that sounds like some really, really, you know, exciting stuff coming up. So, I just want to say thanks, Dean, for coming on to the X-Cast.
Thank you, Tony.
It's been a real thrill. Thank you so much for coming on and giving up your time.
And I'm glad you enjoyed a spoiler, you know.
I really did.
That's good. Because, you know, the last 5-6 months, I've been ready to dump on this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... You're the actual first that I've actually spoiled the show to.
I'm actually quite honoured. Thank you. That's great. I've never enjoyed having a spoiler more, I've got to say. obviously people can find you on Facebook and Twitter, I assume. It's just going to type in your name in, I would guess, and you'll come up, right, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, Facebook is Dean Hagelin. I have I'm at my 5,000 friend limit because I was on early and I just said yes to everybody. So... go to my Dean Hagelin page and sign up there. And everything that's on my Facebook goes on the Dean Hagelin page and vice versa. So I'm duplicating that. Twitter, I'm at D Hagelin, so you're not eating up all your characters. Just type in my thing. And Instagram, I'm Dean Hagelin as well. So
that's brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Well, yeah, it's been great. It's been great to have you on the show, Dean. So, yeah, thanks. Everyone will, by now have seen this. So we hope you enjoyed it, guys. And we'll be back for some more coverage on the X-Cast of Season 11 very soon. So, and maybe Dean will be back to talk about his graphic novel one day. I'm still going to hold
it. That'd be good.
So until then, guys, remember, thanks for listening and trust no one. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook at the X-Cast and X-Files podcast, or our Facebook group, the X-Cast Basement and X-Files podcast fan group. And our title song is by Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.